Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin is in the studio today to answer your questions. If you have recently uncovered some hidden treasures, time to dust off those treasures, and we'll give you some advice as to what they are and if they're worth anything. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Do you have any hidden treasures? Dust them and call us, 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Mark Lawson and your antique questions coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques today with Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin. Mark has been buying, selling, and collecting interesting things since he was about 8 years old. After running a traditional antique shop and opening a gallery on Broadway in Saratoga, Mark was approached by Sotheby's in 2000 to assist organizing and curating single-owner sales. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program in Period American Furniture at the Metropolitan Museum. He's also certified in diamond grading from the Gemological Institute of America, an RPI grad with a degree in materials engineering. Mark travels throughout the region, meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. If you have a question about your family treasures, 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Mark Lawson, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, great, Ray. Great to hear you. How the heck have you been?
Well, you know, pretty well. Everybody's healthy on my end. How about you guys?
Yeah, we're all hanging in there, elderly parents and all, thank goodness. Oh, that's a blessing.
That is great. Now, it must be a little more difficult for you, or at least a little more cumbersome, to go out and check out some estates. You got to wear masks and everything. Yeah, but how's it working out for you?
Well, we've been pretty much shut down essentially until recently. We really haven't had any client contact until New York State has started opening back up. We've currently started meeting with one person at a time, you know, with doing social distancing and all the, you know, required safety things. But yeah, it's been a slow time, a time for reflection and wandering out around the warehouse trying to see what I can dig up.
You know, speaking of your warehouse, every now and then my memory's pretty bad, but every now and then I get a little image of something that either frightened me or caught my attention. And one of the times when you were on here not too long ago, you had a little metal Japanese crab. What's the deal with that? And was it worth a lot of money? I remember it was very intricate.
Yeah, it was a type of Japanese art object that became popular in the late 18th century as the Japanese society and culture started moving away from the traditional kind of feudalism with clans and lots of little wars and skirmishes. And there was much less of a demand for the samurai, the warrior class, and thus a much less work for all the metalsmiths and swordsmiths that made arms and armament.
Yeah.
They turned to making interesting little naturalistic depictions of shellfish, animals, insects. And they were fun little art objects, and they've become, you know, over the years, quite a popular collectible. They're exquisitely made, very realistic and lifelike in their surface size and appearance, and they're just they're wonderful little works of art.
Now, the one you brought in, how old was that?
That one dated to the probably mid to late 19th century.
Wow. And is it worth a lot of money?
It's the sort of thing that I would expect to see sell at auction for somewhere between $800 and $1,200.
Wowzers. Now, this had, as I recall, and we'll get to the phones in a minute, enough of my reminiscing. 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. We're talking to Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques. As I recall, this had basically jointed legs. You could move them around, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was very realistic. They created all the, what, eight different legs a crab has with fully functioning joints. And, you know, the you could, you know, play with it on a hard surface and kind of make it look like it was skittering across the table.
Very interesting. All right, Mark, let's get to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. John is in Wilbraham. John, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, John.
Good. So I have an object that was inherited from my cousin's husband's family. I have no idea what the origin was. They were, I think, university professors. So, you know, probably traveled a bit and looked at the world differently. It's a roughly 1 foot cube drink set, and it has very intricate, I would say, Arabic or Islamic carvings on the outside. And when you open it, it has a multi-tiered display of painted glasses of various sizes and shapes, none of them very large, maybe a couple ounces at the most. And it's a very beautiful and in quite good condition. There's a couple broken pieces of the wood on the box. But otherwise, it's in good shape, and I just don't know where to find any information about it.
Sure. So what's the outer case made out of?
It's probably mahogany.
Okay, so some sort of brown wood?
It's some sort of, it's a medium brown, you know, hard, not oak hard, but hardwood.
Sure. And is it carved or decorated, the case itself?
It's very much carved.
Oh, nice, nice. And does it also have, like, a larger, like a decanter or bottle inside?
I haven't opened it since we moved 4 years ago. I wouldn't be surprised if there is one. My recollection is that there's a multi-tiered kind of circular tray inside, and there may be a decanter with three or four different sizes and styles of glasses around it.
Sure. So Islamic motif, Middle Eastern antiques come in a couple of flavors. The Arab world has been creating incredible works of art for, you know, thousands of years, and their civilization peaked or reached a very refined level back in the, around 1,000 years ago. Of course, antiques and objects from that period are very valuable, highly sought after, and many of the things that were made are of exquisite craftsmanship. And I love the kind of the arabesque decoration, the really finely detailed, repeating naturalistic motifs that are just beautiful. If you look at the, like, for example, like the Taj Mahal, if you go there, and that kind of all-over surface decoration that's is just wonderfully pleasing to the eye and a testament to, you know, the highest level of human artistry and craftsmanship. So I love the kind of thing that you're describing. So in terms of the marketplace and value, these types of objects come in a couple of different flavors. You have the older and truly antique things, maybe over 100 years old, early 20th century or late 19th century and earlier, that were made, you know, that were high quality things made for the use of people in the Middle East. Once you get into the 20th century and there's a whole lot more people moving around the world and, you know, wars driving a lot of traffic back and forth and in and around, there's much more of a prevalence of things that were made more quickly and easily for the tourist trade, or for and then later into the 20th century for, you know, export for commercial purposes. The older, really finely done, finely made things are, there's a very good market for, you know, and the all the major auction houses have periodic Islamic art sales where these types of things sell. I remember not long ago, there's all sorts of wonderful things. Of course, carpet rugs and carpets are an integral part of the art of the Middle East and the Islamic and Arab world. Something like, so to go back to what you have, I think it could potentially have good value. It's hard to say for sure without, you know, seeing an image or or getting a good look at it. You know, if it has at least many of the things that I see that people like yourself have that bring things to me to be evaluated are things that very often came back with relatives who served overseas, either in World War One or World War Two, and they can be, you know, really nice quality or not so nice quality. The way that you're describing what you have sounds like a nicer quality thing. Just overall, there's, you know, certainly going to be some subjective value according to how finely it's decorated, its condition, the quality of the carving on the case. But geez, something like that's got to be, you know, at least in the, you know, $200 to $400 range. And I think that would be a conservative low estimate if it's in reasonably good condition and reasonably good quality. But it's potentially worth more than that, depending on how nice it really is.
All right. Thank you for that call. We have to take a quick break here. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques joins us today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Plenty of calls coming up and some email next. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin. And if you have a question about something that may be lurking in your attic that might have some value, give us a call. A couple of quick emails here, Mark, and then we'll jump back on the phones. This one's from Ellen in Wineskill. And Ellen writes, I have 36 quarters, 1932 to 1964, another 15 centennial quarters, a half dozen Liberty half dollars predating 1957, a few half dollars and quarters that have a standing eagle on one side and a standing woman in flowing dress on the other. I've held on to these for decades now. I'd like to do something with them, if possible. And that's from Ellen.
So what Ellen, what you're describing are the types of coins that we see most often. These are coins made out of 90% silver, most of them, that were minted for general circulation in the United States up and through 1964. Most of those coins are common coins. Unless they're in a very high grade of, or a reasonably high grade of uncirculated condition, the value simply derives from the value of the silver in them, which is expressed in the trade as a multiple of the face value. So, you know, the silver, coin silver in the trade, actually it's called junk silver because there's so much of it and it has so little collectible value. The value's expressed, you know, as like currently it would be, you know, between 10 and 12 times face, which is, you know, 10 times or 12, 10 times to 12 times the face value of the coin. So a quarter, 25 cents would be worth would have $2.50 worth of silver in it. A half dollar would 50 cents would have $5 worth of silver in it. The silver dollars, which are going to date from 1935 and back, the peace dollars back to 1921, and then the Morgan silver dollars before that, those have a collectible premium. They're worth more, you know, they'll have, again, the $10 to $12 worth of silver value, but they all still retain some collectible value above that, which will vary, which will go up with their condition. Mm-hmm. The better the condition, the common ones vary anywhere from, you know, from $15 to $20 up to, you know, $25 to $35,
yeah.
Again, depending on how circulated they are.
All right, this email from Joe, and I love this question. You and I have touched on this before. Joe writes, I am curious how the stock market roller coaster has affected the value of material things like gems, jewelry, and diamonds. Has the value of collectibles like these gone up, down, or remained the same in the past 5 or 6 months? Thanks, as always. And that's a great question from Joe. And we've sort of talked about the cyclical nature of this.
Oh, we talk about that. We've talked about that a lot, and that's been a giant thing in my business. With generally over the last 10 years, you know, prices for most things dropping 60% to 90% because there's so much less demand for them for a variety of reasons, which we've discussed:
yeah.
Technology, lifestyles, all sorts of things. But it's interesting. I've obviously, you know, I certainly have some skin in this game.
Yeah.
Over the last 3 to 4 months, I've been watching the marketplace very carefully. And curiously, and I don't think this is just going to be in my business, I think the COVID-19 pandemic and being shut down and at home, it's helped online sales of all types. And I don't think that's a trend that's going to change anytime soon, frankly. And I've been happy to see that in most areas, because I've been looking at big auction houses, small auction houses, sales on eBay, sales on, you know, at auctions around the world, prices are holding up pretty well.
Hmm.
Any other time we've had this kind of economic discontinuity or whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
Anything like this happening, business has always suffered. Now, certainly the antique shops aren't doing well. Any place that's dependent on people coming in and
yeah.
having a live interaction is not going to do well. But, you know, the sales for high-value things, medium-range things, I mean, they've dropped from where they were 15, 20 years ago, but they've held up and in some cases are even, you know, getting a little bit of a bounce up during this last, 3 to 4 month period.
Very interesting. Mark Lawson is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 here on Vox Pop. Patty is in Adams, Mass. Patty, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a diamond ring. It's, in a Tiffany setting,
mm-hmm.
It's about 23, 24 years old since I've had it.
Okay.
And in the middle of the diamond is a black dot.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that black dot is going to lessen the value of the diamond.
It's a good question and a logical question. And unfortunately, I got to tell you, it absolutely will lessen the value. So, diamonds are graded on several different, you know, generally four different characteristics: the cut, the color, the carat weight, and the clarity. So the clarity is how clear they are, how free mm-hmm. of inclusions and flaws they are. And there's a grading system that goes from IF, which would be internally flawless at the high end, all the way down to a third tier down of, they just call it I for included. Once you have a visible flaw, especially, you know, the black dot, it's a little piece of carbon that didn't get turned into diamond. It stayed as a little piece of coal in there. Once you have something, a flaw that's visible to the naked eye, that significantly affects value because it's something that the untrained eye can see. once you have any, once you have a color, a little bit of yellow or brown in a diamond that is noticeable, or a black spot like that that's noticeable, it drops the value down into the lower tiers, unfortunately.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be worth nothing, but the, you know, if the color is good, that'll help. If the size is a good size, if the cut is nice, you know, that will help offset the downside of the black spot.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Mark Lawson is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. And David in West. Hello, David. You're on.
Yeah, hi. When I was a little boy, over 60-plus years ago, I hated weeding the garden. But one day, my parents sent me out to the vegetable garden, and I came back with an 1806 with a 7 struck over the 6 penny. And I would call it in reasonably good condition.
Huh.
That's good. That's a funny little find out there in the garden.
So
how corroded or weathered was the surface?
I don't know how to judge that, but it's all very readily, easily, you know, discernible, the markings and everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
I would not call it bad condition, but I could send a photograph of it sometime if that would be helpful.
Well, so is it it's a 1 cent, large cent?
Yes.
Can you read on the back that it says all the lettering on the back of it?
I believe so. I haven't looked at it in several years, but I believe so, yes.
Well, it's interesting because what you have, the 1807 over 6, well, it depends on whether it's a small 7 or a large 7. The small 7 is the rarer of the two, we certainly could help you figure out which one it was. But the small 7, if you have it, is worth quite a bit, making your coin potentially worth greater than $1,000.
Wow!
If it's the large 7, which is more likely since it's the more common one, you know, then, you know, you might be back, you might be down, you know, between, you know, $50 to $100 or maybe a little bit more depending on what the condition is. But yeah, potentially,
okay.
We don't know, but potentially you have a nice little garden find.
Now, what does the 7 over the 6 mean?
Well, so what happened was back in those days, we were much more economical than we were today. And when the year changed, they might, and there was a shortage of material for carving new dies, they might have taken the 1806 die that was used to stamp the coin and just carve a 7 into it. But you still have the remains of the outline of the 6 behind the 7, so when stamped, it would look like a 7 stamped over the 6.
Why bother? Why not just leave it with the 6? I don't understand the logic behind this.
Well, it's the new year, Ray. I mean, come on. Time marches on.
Yeah, all right, so some guy could find it in his garden. All right, let's go to Annette in New Paltz. Annette, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Annette.
Mr. Lawson. Hi. I discovered among my possessions a large, heavy, gold-colored coin, and I took it to a friend that I know. You know, he's not in this business at all. And he thought that it was referring to the King Carol I in Bohemia.
Okay.
And I guess his dates were 1346 to 1378.
Okay.
And my friend told me that some of these are fakes. That I might not have a real one, but he didn't know, and he said to try to reach you someday, and then here you are.
Wow.
Sure. Well, in order to answer your question, I would have to at least see an image of it, preferably see it in person. A gold coin of that size from that era would be a great rarity and of exceptional value. So it's more likely that it's some sort of later reproduction. But you never know. There's always the chance that, you know, the I buy lottery tickets, the hoping against hope that, you know, someday I'll be the lucky guy to test whether I can, you know, prevail against what has caused all, many other people to lose their souls.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, thank you for darkening up the show. Well done. Yeah.
I'd love to see a Carol, of course. Carol the First would be similar. It would be another way of saying Charles the First. And I'd love to see the coin sometime.
Well, how can she get in touch with you and maintaining social distancing?
Telephone's always good. Our website's a great resource for all the types at marklawson.com for all the types of things we can help with and all the different ways to reach us.
All right. Annette, thanks, and good luck with that one. Over to our buddy Nina in East Hoosick. Hello, Nina.
Hi. I'm curious about what I think are Japanese prints. I've seen them of this quality in museums, actually, that were brought back after World War II, as you mentioned, with the former caller. One is quite large of, I'll just describe very briefly. It's obviously of a woman from the court, the way she's dressed. It's in very, very good shape, both of them are, and that's about 13 by 30. I have not unframed them. My parents had them framed beautifully, so I don't know who the artist is. Mm-hmm. And then there's a smaller one, and I'd like to know, you know, I realize it's very hard to comment on something you haven't seen.
Sure.
But you probably recognize something. These are antique prints. They are not from World War II. These are antique prints. And you know, if you have any thoughts about it, and if this is
certainly
something also that you might take a look at, because they need to be identified and appraised.
All right, we have about 90 seconds before the break, Mark, so go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'd be happy to. Many of the more popular ones were reprinted, so there are ones that were originally made in the 18th century that were reprinted from the same blocks refurbished blocks in the early 20th century. So their values can range for quite drastically for things that look the same. Most of the common ones I see that are authentic have a market value today between $50 and $150 each. That's most of the ones I see. Exceptional ones by better artists of, you know, remarkable beauty, you know, those can run into thousands of dollars, whether they're from the 20th century or the 18th century or earlier. They are beautiful. They were very popular in Japan, and I see quite a few that, as you said, were brought back from GIs coming back from World War II.
All right, Nina, we have to take a break, but thank you for the call. Mark Lawson joins us today. We talk antiques on this edition of Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you on a nice Tuesday afternoon. Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques is our guest today. 800-348-2551, the number. This email came in from Paul. Paul says, I have several boxes of books from the late 1800s that belong to my husband's grandmother. I've tried to sell a few of the children's volumes on eBay without any luck. Do you know a good website or store where I can sell old books? I have looked at Abe Books, but it seems too difficult for the amateur seller. Thank you for your help, Paul.
Yeah, great question. I get calls on books all the time. I will say generally volume basis, the volume of books that are saleable and valuable in a given, you know, big box of books is generally pretty small. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't see beautiful collections or nice groups of great books. It's just there are more that there's little or no demand for than there are ones that people are looking for and paying lots of money for. There's another website. It's called Al Libris, which is a larger kind of clearinghouse for smaller book dealers around the world, which mm-hmm. has a much larger database, if you would, of books for sale. That's a good resource for looking things up. I'm not sure about selling things there, but I think probably the what you want to find are the books that appear to that might have a good value. In my experience from looking at this, if a book, you know, has a fair maybe retail price online, like on a place like Alibris or A-Books, of say $500, that means you might get $100 or $150 for it in an auction venue like eBay.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
Maybe a fifth, but it's got to be a pretty good book. I think once you get, if you're looking at books that are averaging selling for less than that, it's going to be, you know, like fishing for the big catch. You're going to be
yeah.
sitting there with your line in the water for a real long time waiting for the right person to come swimming by. The so that would be a way to go. It's just hard because there's so much. It's like many of the areas that I deal in. It's a declining marketplace. There, you know, the big book places have closed down.
Yep.
Most content that people are interested in is available for free through your phone or online. So there's less and less demand. So I think the vetting for the higher value things and then trying to sell those. You know, and there's also good resources locally. Dennis Holtzman is a specialist in rare books in Albany. John DeMarco passed away unfortunately at the Lyrical Ballad Bookstore up in Saratoga Springs, but his wife Jan still runs the place. It's an amazing bookstore. If you've never been there, it's worth a trip. And they also buy and sell, so that's
okay.
A local resource.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Andy in Poughkeepsie. Andy, you're on.
Yes, hello. I inherited, from what I can try to discern, are ceramic beer steins, and I believe they're like either German or Austrian, mm-hmm. and they're very ornate and glazed, and I've got about a half dozen of them. A couple of them are 10 to 8 inches, and actually I've got two others that are like literally like 2 feet, 2.5 feet. I have no idea where they are. Are they just tourist things? Could they possibly be real?
Yeah, they certainly could be real. We see lots of steins. The collectible ones are generally the pre-World War II steins. And even back in the 20s and 30s, there were a lot of steins that were kind of made for export or for the tourists. Well, probably the most collected maker of steins was Villeroy and Bach that did steins under the trade name Metlach, Mettlach. Metlach steins are very collected. They're very high quality. The prices for lots of them, like everything else, have dropped significantly over the last 10 years. However, they're exquisite quality. They're going to be clearly marked with an incised mark on the bottom, and they also all have a unique four digit code that it's easy to identify what they're called and research their value. So that's one place to look. Look for the Metlach mark, and it'll be spelled right out on the bottom, and with a four digit code next to it. There are other collectible, usually figural steins. Musterschutz is one. You know, steins that were, you know, early 20th century or late 19th century, they're often figural, maybe in the shape of a cute little fox or a little gnome or something, but nice quality. Mm-hmm. I think to me, when you're describing them as, you know, really nicely made, that's could be an indication okay. that you have things that have a little bit of value. The values for Metlock Steins have dropped. That, you know, common ones today might be in the 50 to 150 range, and mm-hmm. uncommon ones can be, you know, 2 to 400 and on up, depending okay. on how nice the decoration is or really how collected that specific stein can be.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. Now let's go to Matthew in Albany. Matthew, you are on with Mark Lawson.
Hey, Matt.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. I'm going to ask this question on behalf of, I think, anyone who is under 30. So if we have parents who have an extensive silverware collection and we have neither a desire or a use for them, what should we do with them? Are they worth money? I'm imagining that it is a full set. There's also a silver tea set. So what to look for on the silver? Again, is it sold as silver by weight, or is it sold as a set? The two sets that I know of, they do have an engraving on the back, so I think they were, you know, purchased by a specific person and then sold at a estate later. And then, of course, I have a follow-up question, and that would be cleaning it. Do you clean it? Do you not clean it? What are the rules on that? Because I know I've heard multiple different things, so I don't want to, you know, get my wires crossed.
Okay.
Wow, I could do a whole show just on your question.
Well, we have 8 minutes left, so do what you can.
Okay, so quickly, the silver flatware sets were the staple of every, you know, middle class, upper middle class, and upper class household throughout the 20th century. Some of them were made out of solid sterling silver, 92.5% pure. Others were made silver plated, a thin layer of silver over some sort of brass-like alloy, typically. So today, lifestyles have changed. They don't build formal dining rooms anymore. Nobody uses them. Most people, if you have to polish it and you can't put it in the dishwasher, then they don't want anything to do with it. I hate the idea of destroying and melting down these things. I always try and find a home for these sets when I can. But because there's so much of a supply and so little demand, unless it's an exceptional mm-hmm. pattern by an exceptional maker, the value is simply going to be a function of the value of the silver in the set. Generally, most sets I see today have a complete set might have a value, you know, anywhere from $500 to $700 up to $1,500 to $2,000 just for the silver value, and that's average.
Mm-hmm.
By law since 1891, the sets have to be marked. If they're manufactured for sale in the United States, by law they have to be sterling silver, and they have to be marked with the word sterling or 925. I buy and sell a large volume of this type of material. I'm always happy to help. In terms of cleaning, what you want to avoid are the dips. So the chemical dips or the treatments where you use a aluminum plate and a baking soda solution will actually takes the tarnish off, but also takes a layer of silver off.
Okay.
And over time will cause the silver to become pitted and will actually, you know, degrade and destroy the value of it. Serious silver collectors that prize 18th century and earlier sterling silver objects can tell by looking. There's no way to reproduce the patina that comes from centuries of careful hand polishing, which is destroyed in an instant by one of these chemical dips. So stay away from the chemical dips.
All right, Matthew, thanks a lot. Quickly over to Betty in Niskayuna. Betty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very large coin collection that we inherited, and I don't know if this is a good time to sell these coins or if you should sell it as a collection or individually.
Well,
just wondering what to do.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. There's drawers full, and they're very organized in sleeves and several, you know how the U.S. Mint used to put out several of those kinds,
Yeah, the Mint sets and proof sets.
Yeah.
Yes.
Case commemorative.
What do you do?
Coins.
What do you do?
So the a couple of things I'd want to say is that coin collecting was one of the most popular hobbies throughout the 20th century. As the population of people who collected coins during that period have downsized or retired or passed on, very few people have been taking their place. So there's the coin collecting as a hobby is much less popular today. The good thing about many of the coins that are certainly in your collection is they're made out of precious metals. And while they're for the more common ones, the collectible value has declined significantly, if not disappeared altogether, during the same period, the precious metal value has gone up significantly, so offsetting some of the losses from the collectible coins. It's hard to generalize completely with something like this, but if you're ever considering selling a collection, a dealer is going to go through and look at and assign a value as he's adding up the value of the collection for every single coin. So it's not a matter of selling them individually or as a collection. I think you will, from a professional, you're going to get the same price either way. And it really, I think it depends on many of the factors that will dictate it is, you know, the considerations of your family and what you want to do, whether you want to pass things on or not. There's certainly an argument to be made for having precious metals as a part of a well-balanced portfolio. On the other hand, the collectible value, if you just look at the collectible values for coins over time, they've steadily been declining over the last 20 to 30 years. So one approach that might suggest is keeping some of the, if you want to invest a little bit in silver or gold bullion, keep some of the more common silver or gold coins as an investment in that way. The things that only have collectible value with no silver or gold value that aren't great rarities, dispose of. And then the rarities, that's kind of an unknown. Some of those have gone up, gone down. It's a volatile market. I think it's tricky to invest in rare coins unless you're really an expert or really have deep pockets. But, you know, they're all questions to be considered and discussed with your family if you're going to make an informed decision.
Betty, thanks a lot. Now, we only have 2 minutes left here with Mark Lawson, and let's go to a fellow who has been waiting for a half an hour. George in Hurley, you're on.
George, thanks for your patience.
Yes, hey. Yes, no problem, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Good.
Good. So my question for you, Mark, is I have a collection of probably about 150 antique lures that was passed down to me from my mother. She told me as a kid, I think she gave them to me when I was about six. Yeah, antique fishing lures.
Nice.
I don't know if you have some knowledge with them, but I've had them for years and years. I'm in my 30s now, and I just kind of wanted to know, like, what I had. Some of them, I have some research that I've done on my own, are wooden lures with glass eyes that seem to be hand painted. And from my knowledge, I know some of those are somewhat valuable. And I just kind of wanted to get an idea of what I should be looking for in my collection that may be worth something and things that may not be, because it's a bit of a mixed bunch. Some saltwater lures, freshwater lures, and things
like
that.
We only have about 30 seconds here, Mark, so go ahead.
Okay, I think it's another area of collectibles that is generally softened somewhat, perhaps not as much as other areas. So the prices have held up better. Anytime you have earlier lures with the original boxes, that can multiply the value many times over. And really, it's the early 20th century and 19th century material where there's the potential for the highest value. Be happy to try and refer you to an appraiser if you'd like, if you want to reach out to us subsequently.
All right. Now, while we have 15 seconds here, Mark, how do people find you on the internet once again?
The website is marklawson.com. Great resource about the types of things we handle, things, ways to contact us, and we also have a blog. We create a blog for the WAMC show, kind of going over the things that we discussed and try to flesh the discussion out a little bit. And if I have some leftover emails or anybody left hanging on the phone that I get a query for, I'll try and address that on the
tremendous
blog post as well.
All right, we're out of time here, but Mark, thanks so much. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing custom exhibit design and fabrication, including protective shielding, acrylic dividers, and portable barriers for office and retail environments. Your partner for a custom experience, EmpireExhibits.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany hard cider made from local apples, pizza, light fare, and cider for pickup and delivery 7 days a week. 518-449-9999 for delivery, 9pincider.com. Interim Healthcare, for 50 years, their caregivers working to help people remain safe in their homes, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. Thanks to Zach the Engineer, Amber Sickles took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Computers. Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian will be here. Stand by now for the book show.